Next session number 12524, Reel 4.
Commodore Brown, Reel 4.
Right. Yes, by beefing up the ammunition belt feed mechanisms, they cured the fault completely, just in the nick of time, for the start of the flying bomb offensive. So again, although the Tempest probably wasn't as good on a ground attack aircraft as the Typhoon, and certainly wasn't a very good air-to-air interceptor fighter, I think it probably played a major role in shooting down the flying bombs.
How much pressure were you under as a test pilot to get the results?
Well, quite clearly, you know, one could see the requirement and the time scale for it, and so the whole activity was fairly extensive. One was flying three or four weapons proving trips a day in order to clear both the weapons and the aircraft. The fighter bomber flight, too, as a point of interest, also had a modest involvement in the development of some of the strategic weapons. And at that particular time, the two newish weapons for Bomber Command were the 12,000-pound Tall Boy and the 22,000-pound Grand Slam, big high-explosive bomb, as the Tall Boy was really an armor-piercing bomb. And one of our Spitfires was fitted with a beam-facing camera, a sideways-looking camera, and the pilot was invited to fly in formation on these big bombs as they left the aircraft and follow them as far down as he could to the target. A Spitfire was also flying round the area of Lion Bay to photograph a 22,000-pound Grand Slam for its first drop into the sea. And it looked as though most of the English Channel was rising up to meet him.
Which year was this?
That'd be 1943-44.
And you were doing the test pilot work right to the end of the war?
Yes, until 1946, when I then went to do the test pilot's course.
You didn't fly any jets during the war?
Yes, I did. In fact, I flew the very early Meteor and Vampire. In fact, I think we were the first Air Force people to get them. Again, to sort of clear the weapons. That must have been in 1943, I think.
What do you remember about the first time you flew the Meteor jet?
Anticlimax. Because whatever their theoretical performance may have been, the impression was that they were sluggish compared to the contemporary fighters coming along, particularly the Hornet and the latest marks of Spitfire, because the power really wasn't all that great. the acceleration on takeoff was really quite poor. Once they were up in the air and they got going, it was a bit better. But of course, very quickly, you know, the more powerful engines were developed, and both the Meteor and the Vampire developed into quite good fighters. But at that stage, I think they really demonstrated the principle of jet propulsion rather than represent a first-class operational fighting aeroplane.
What do you remember about learning about the German effort on the jets at the end of the war?
I personally didn't know much about it until the war had finished. It was a bit of a surprise.
That they'd advanced so far?
Yes. And that the ME-262 particularly had such a good performance.
During the war, did you ever come across this phenomenon called LMF?
No, not really. I never met anybody that that suffered from that. Fortunately, and maybe it's because people were able to identify the symptoms fairly early on, and the person concerned was smuggled away. And I do think, for most of the time anyway, that conditions for the fighter pilots were far less dangerous and worrying than for people taking part in the bomber offensive, where they knew that the chances of completing a tour of 30 operations were less than 50-50. The trips were shorter, and I think there was more exhilaration in what one was doing. But I'm sure there were people, but I think they were dealt with fairly discreetly. So I never saw it as a problem, and in fact, I remember in Fighter Command when it was announced that there were going to be formal tours, you know, after 200 hours operational flying, people would be given a rest. I think we were all very indignant and highly surprised that anybody thought we needed a rest. Naturally, people were rested after being badly wounded or a particularly trying time. But the idea of a formal tour of operations seemed to us at the time quite unnecessary. But I'd emphasise that was for the day fighter pilots.
How did members of the public during the war treat and react to pilots going about in uniform with their wings up? Did they fit you in any way? Or make a fuss of you?
Not demonstrably, I don't think. One can sense that that at one time the Air Force was being held in a fairly high regard. But I think as time went on, the general public got used to it. And, for example, the Air Force in Lincolnshire was just part of the scene. And I'm sure not too many people at the time knew just what sort of a tour of operations or an ordeal, or understood an ordeal, some of the crews were undergoing, and I think they were just accepted, as they are now, in fact, as part of the Lincolnshire scene.